Today's special broadcast of The Action Line is dedicated to the memory of Nancy Arlene Woodall. Nancy Woodall was one of the most outstanding women that our community has ever produced. Nancy Woodall was born in Oklahoma, but she spent most of her life here in Rutherford County, Tennessee. She had a special love for children, and especially for those children who needed a special love. Nancy Woodall was a foster mother, and Nancy Woodall especially cared for children with special needs. Miss Woodall began her foster care when her brother-in-law, Smyrna Police Chief Mike Beach, called and asked for her help with some children who were in distress. Nancy Woodall had children of her own, but she always made room for one more who was in need. Over four decades, Nancy Woodall was foster mother to over 400 children. Her foster children included children with autism, children with Down syndrome, and even children who had undergone organ transplant surgery. Nancy Woodall was also instrumental in starting the Angel Tree program for Rutherford County. One of Nancy Woodall's most caring acts occurred in 1991 when Nancy Woodall became the foster mother of a four-month-old baby. That baby was Amanda Lane. Amanda Lane had been savagely abused by her father, and the attack left Amanda unable to walk or talk or even feed herself. Because of the extra care that Amanda needed, Nancy Woodall was forced to stop working outside of the home. Nancy Woodall continued to care for Amanda. When Amanda reached the age of 16 in 2007, Nancy Woodall took the giant step of adopting Amanda Lane and changing her name to Amanda Woodall. On August the 30th, 2013, Amanda Lane Woodall died. Amanda was 22 years of age. Her death ended a lifetime of love and caring from Nancy Woodall. And on today's special broadcast, in our Call to Conviction segment, you will hear how our criminal justice system sought justice on behalf of Amanda Woodall, a death which had occurred more than 21 years after she was so violently abused. It is with great sadness that I now announce that on Sunday, June the 8th, 2025, Nancy Woodall passed away. Nancy Woodall was 71 years of age. She lived her life to the fullest, sharing her life and her motherly love with so many children. Nancy Woodall, you will forever be loved and remembered by the children that you showed a mother's love. And we dedicate this special edition of The Action Line to you, Nancy Woodall.
This is WGNS Action Line, talking with Rutherford County newsmakers about what matters most to you.
Your host, J. Paul Newman of the monthly District Attorney Show, will now take you on a journey to explore recent Rutherford County court cases, cold cases, and more.
This is FM 100.5, 101.9, AM 1450, and WGNSradio.com. Rutherford County's place to talk. Stand by, Rutherford County. The WGNS Action Line continues a search for truth.
We welcome everyone to the program. My name is J. Paul Newman. My co-hosts are District Attorney General Jennings Jones and former District Attorney General William C. Weitzel, Jr. We appreciate WGNS providing the airtime. And we also thank our producer, Scott Walker. Most of all, we thank you for listening. Today, in our Call to Conviction segment, we will highlight a case that drew national attention. It was a case that I am very proud to have prosecuted. It is a case where a helpless infant child was abused and severely injured. Shortly after the injuries were inflicted, the abuser was prosecuted and punished for the abuse. More than 20 years later, the child died from those injuries. After intensive medical and legal interviews, my legal research indicated that no one in the state of Tennessee had ever been successfully prosecuted where the injuries and the death were separated by more than 20 years. And this case was even more complicated because the abuser had already been punished for the abuse. After considering the legal arguments, the medical findings, and the horrific facts of this crime, it was decided that the case should be prosecuted. It was my honor to have the opportunity to prosecute this case and to seek justice on behalf of my most helpless and sympathetic victim. The case was the murder of Amanda Lane Woodall, and it will be our focus on today's From Call to Conviction. Then in our What's the Law segment, former District Attorney General Bill Weitzel will discuss some of the legal issues of the Amanda Woodall case. And in our Inside the Court segment, District Attorney General Jennings Jones will tell you about recent and upcoming grand jury, general sessions, and circuit court activity. We will begin the broadcast after you listen to these important messages.
Farm Fresh Fridays and Tuesdays.
Fresh eggs, homemade jams, locally raised meats.
And every vendor grows or raises it themselves.
7 a.m. to 1.
It's not just a market, it's the Middle Tennessee tradition.
Celebrating our 50th anniversary, the Farmers Market in Murfreesboro on John R. Rice Boulevard.
This is Peter Demas, and our family is inviting your family to come eat with us at Demas's restaurant. When Kristen said, okay, you know, when we're going to do the remodel, because we're celebrating 35 years, we also wanted to make it more open and inviting, so we made the lobby a lot more open. Booth seats a little bit different colors to kind of still keep it a little up to date, make it fresh. We wanted to make it cozier, make it a little bit brighter for people to see, to pay homage to where we have been the entire time. Demas's restaurant on Northwest Broad Street.
Celebrate Christmas in July, this Saturday at Animal City in Murfreesboro. From 2 until 5 in the afternoon, bring your pet for a festive photo with Santa. Just a $5 donation supports the community blessing box for pets right out front. It's a joy, jingle, and a chance to give back. Join the fun at 919 Northwest Broad Street, Animal City, this Saturday, where pets meet Christmas in July.
From Call to Conviction. Time now for a look back at one of the more intriguing and important cases for this community. From the crime, the investigation, to the prosecution.
Our case study today details a tragic saga. It begins on September the 24th, 1991, and ends over 25 years later, on March the 3rd, 2017. This is the case involving the life and death of Amanda Lane Woodall. Amanda Lane was born on August 22, 1991, 33 days later, on September the 24th, 1991. Five-week-old Amanda Lane was taken to the hospital. Amanda Lane had suffered severe head injuries and brain damage. Amanda's father told hospital personnel he had accidentally dropped Amanda. The child's mother told the doctors that Amanda's injuries were no accident. She reported that five-week-old Amanda had been beaten by Amanda's father. The hospital promptly notified the Department of Children's Services, who in turn notified the Rutherford County Sheriff's Office. Amanda Lane's injuries were so severe that she would develop cerebral palsy. She would not be able to speak. She would not be able to feed herself. She became blind, and she would remain bedridden and helpless for the rest of her life. On September the 24th, 1991, Anthony Shannon Lane was arrested and charged with the aggravated child abuse of Amanda Lane. On September the 25th, 1991,
Anthony Lane was interviewed by Rutherford County Sheriff's Detectives Chuck Thomas and J.D. Driver. During the interview, Anthony Lane admitted that he had lied to the doctors regarding Amanda's injuries. He told the detectives that he did strike his five-week-old daughter three times because she would not stop crying. Anthony Lane was represented by Murfreesboro attorney Steve Waldron. The state was represented by Assistant District Attorney William C. Weitzel, Jr. Following a suppression hearing, Judge Steve Daniel denied the defense motion. Anthony Lane's confession would be heard by the jury. A trial date was set for May the 20th, 1992. When May the 20th, 1992 arrived, Anthony Shannon Lane decided not to go to trial. Instead, he entered a plea of guilty as charged to aggravated child abuse. Pursuant to the plea agreement, Judge Daniel sentenced Anthony Shannon Lane to serve 10 years in the Tennessee Department of Corrections. Everyone believed this tragic and horrific case was now over, but that would indeed not be the case. Nancy Woodall adopted Amanda Lane, and Amanda Lane became Amanda Lane Woodall. Because of the injuries Amanda received at the hands of her father, her condition never improved. Amanda remained bedridden. She had to wear diapers past her infancy and through and beyond her teenage years. Amanda never gained the ability to speak. She could never feed herself. Amanda would, at various times, need to be hospitalized related to her injuries. On August the 30th, 2013, Amanda Lane Woodall died. At the time of her death, Amanda Lane Woodall was 22 years old. On August 31st, 2013, an autopsy was performed by Dr. Aaron Carney of the State Medical Examiner's Office. Dr. Carney found that Amanda Lane Woodall died as a result of complications of remote blunt force trauma. Dr. Carney also reported that Amanda Lane Woodall's death was a homicide. Detective Steve Kohler of the Rutherford County Sheriff's Office was assigned to investigate this new development. On July the 24th, 2014, Anthony Shannon Lane was arrested and charged with the murder of Amanda Lane Woodall. The Rutherford County Grand Jury returned an indictment charging Anthony Shannon Lane with the murder of Amanda Lane Woodall. The case was assigned to the court of Judge David Bragg. Anthony Shannon Lane was represented by Murfreesboro attorney Brock East. Representing the state was Assistant District Attorney J. Paul Newman. On March the 3rd, 2017, more than 25 years after Amanda's injuries were inflicted by her father, Anthony Shannon Lane pled guilty to the murder of Amanda Lane Woodall. Pursuant to the plea agreement, Judge Bragg sentenced Lane to serve 20 years in the Tennessee State Penitentiary. This sentence was in addition to the 10-year sentence Lane received in 1992. This case is a landmark case that began in 1991 and ended over 25 years later in 2017. Present in court when Anthony Shannon Lane entered his plea was Assistant Public Defender J.D. Driver, the former detective who helped bring justice to this case. It is our honor to have J.D. Driver in the studio today. We begin by saying, J.D., welcome to the broadcast.
Thank you, J. Paul. It's a pleasure to be here with you this morning.
J.D., I know that you have worn many hats and had various careers. Can you share with us the various paths that you have traveled over these years?
Well, for 14 years, I was a law enforcement officer here in Rutherford County. I spent the last seven of that as an investigator with the Rutherford County Sheriff's Department.
What was it that motivated you to attend and complete law school?
I had a friend that I'd worked with, and his name's Tom Davis. He was later a Dr. Tom Davis out to the university. He had went through the Nashville YMCA Night Law School. I think you and I know it very well. And Tom had encouraged me to do this.
What motivated you to become an assistant public defender?
Well, at the time I joined the public defender's office, I can recall it well. Gerald Melton, the public defender, the only public defender for Rutherford County, and I were talking one day in Woodbury. I was sitting as special judge up there for the late John Melton, and he had talked to me about maybe joining him. He made an offer, and I accepted.
Anthony Shannon Lane pled guilty in 1992 on your case. Share with us now what thoughts entered your mind when you heard that over two decades later, he had been charged with murder.
I had lost track of the child during that time. I didn't know basically what had happened with him. I didn't hear about this matter until I think you notified me, J. Paul, and told me that I might be a witness at some point in time and provided me with a document of an old statement that I took from Mr. Lane at that point in time back in 1991.
And I know that the district attorney that worked with you on this case was General Bill Weitzel, and I'm going to turn the microphone over to Bill for a few questions.
John, I want to welcome you to the program this morning, and I remember this case pretty well. It was a big deal at the time. I was not the DA, I was the assistant DA, and I recall that the big issue in the case was the statements that Mr. Lane made. I know that you and Detective Thomas interviewed him at the hospital, but initially, what information had you and Detective Thomas received from Mr. Lane?
Well, when we went down there, we were looking at this matter as suspicious. We had received information from the hospital that the medical personnel there did not think that the stories given by the parents were matching the injuries. We talked to those folks first. I remember that before we ever talked to the mother or Mr. Lane about what might have happened to this child. Trying to gain some information that if this was a situation where this child was injured in any way that was not accidental, we could weed out that statements and go more to the gist of the matter if this was an intentional act.
Based on your investigation at the hospital, Mr. Lane ultimately changed his story somewhat and admitted to hitting the child.
That is correct. We were able to separate him, talk to him individually. It was a situation where he did make a statement that he had lost his temper and had struck his child. We took him into custody at that point in time. He was transported from Vanderbilt Hospital back to the Rutherford County Sheriff's Department, and there we took a more detailed statement from him.
Ultimately, as Mr. Newman indicated, the court upheld the admission of Mr. Lane's statement, which I think were very damning. And I want to tell you, had it not been for his statements and the work that you and Detective Thomas did, I don't believe that he would have pled guilty.
I think that we had built a good case, and certainly want to give Chuck Thomas every bit of credit that he deserves. He worked just as hard as I did in regard to these. I guess I just was the person asking the questions on that day when things got recorded. But Chuck obviously put in the time, is still protecting the citizens of Rutherford County.
I know in your career, you've always represented your clients zealously and within the bounds of the law and in an ethical manner, but you've had the occasion to represent people charged with very similar crimes to what Mr. Lane was charged with. Tell us how you come to represent people who have done some terrible things.
Well, the first thing that I ask anybody that I'm representing, did you make a statement to the police? Because those are very, very difficult to get back if you ever did that. And then you simply look at the discovery that the state files, and we have a great district attorney's office, and we have really good relationships with all the criminal bar, in my opinion. And it's a situation where there's no surprise. If there's a medical report, then we'll see a medical report, and we share those with our clients. We show them all the discovery that is provided and what we think would be brought up or appropriate in court. It is difficult to go into some of these situations. If we look at the ethical rules that attorneys have to too zealously. Protect your client, and that's what we're there for. And I hope people understand that. Sometimes I tell people, say, you couldn't do that, and I said, well, I guess you believe in the Constitution because that is part of the Constitution.
And because we are a country of the rule of law, it's necessary that in order to have a good criminal justice system, that people be competent, that the state be held to follow the rules and to do so in an ethical manner, and certainly, as you've pointed out, uphold the standards and traditions of this country and the rule of law in our Constitution and statutes.
Mr. Driver, we want to thank you for your service that you have provided to the community. You serve the public as a police officer, and we also want to thank you for the service you now provide to the people of this community who cannot afford an attorney. Do you have any parting comments?
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here to talk about these old matters and to, in all honesty, see justice brought for this young woman. I never met Miss Woodall until that day in court when Mr. Lane pled. I was moved. I wouldn't be the person that could have brought in the child with the challenges that that child had and see her every day taking care of every need she had and even at some point in time adopting that child. That is a woman that I can't say I admire more.
And I share those thoughts with you. It was a pleasure working with Miss Woodall on this case. I can tell you that she has told me that she has taken care of 416 different children that she has taken on an emergency basis and taken care of. Now, when we return, Bill Weitzel will tell us what's the law as he examines some of the more interesting aspects of this case.
You feel great at Adam's Place.
Melanie teaches all of our exercise classes. I do the stretch and balance.
Alan Butcher.
Avis is our water aerobics instructor. It's really helped me to overcome some of my arthritis pain, and it's just a wonderful thing that we have here.
Hi, this is Terry Deal at Adam's Place. Call me for more information about Adam's Place. Phone 615-904-9111.
Adam's Place on Memorial, across from Walmart.
What's the law? Time now for an examination of the laws of Tennessee. This is not intended to be legal advice and is being presented solely for the informational benefit of our listening audience. You should always consult with an attorney whenever you need or rely on legal advice.
Paul, I want to talk about two aspects of this case that are kind of unusual, and people might wonder, how in the world can you prosecute somebody for a homicide 22 years later? And there are two issues here, the passage of time, and also because he had been found guilty or pled guilty to this earlier crime, how is this not double jeopardy? So I want to start first by the passage of time. At common law, and that's a term of art, the United States derived our laws based on the common law of England. And the common law is law that is precedent set by the courts. In other words, it's not what we refer to as a statute or statutory law, but it's court-made law. And under English common law, there was a rule that you could not prosecute anyone for murder if the death of the victim occurred a year and a day after the event. And for many years, that was thought to be the law in the state of Tennessee. It really never came up. Now, in 1989, the Tennessee legislature adopted our new criminal code, which is the statutory code. And in that, they specifically said that in Tennessee, the common law no longer applies, but our criminal code is the governing law, the statutory law that defines what constitutes a crime, the procedure, the sentencing, and all of the aspects of the criminal justice system. And in 1999, in a case, Rogers versus State, our state Supreme Court formally abolished the old year and a day law, saying Tennessee no longer adheres to the common law, and therefore the victim's death does not have to occur within a year and a day. So that's the reason that in this case, even though the death occurred 22 years later, that the prosecution was able to go forward. Now, the next question, why is this not double jeopardy since the person had been convicted earlier of the crime of aggravated child abuse? And the reason for that is that all crimes are made up of elements. For instance, aggravated child abuse. Aggravated child abuse would be the intentional, knowing, or reckless harming of a child that causes injury. And so those were the two elements there. The additional element is that the child died. And that element then is outside of the child abuse and creates the charge of murder. In other words, the intentional or knowing killing of this child. And so because the child died, that additional element was present. And our courts have held that in that case, that you can go and charge for the higher crime of murder. Now, I want to ask you a question, because at the time that Mr. Lane was charged with the homicide, I think the death occurred while I was still in office, but by the time he was indicted, I had gone. So I want to ask you a little bit about that case, and specifically your research concerning the amount of time, the 22 years that had passed.
The first thing I did when I was notified that this was going to be ruled a homicide by the medical examiner's office was I contacted the state attorney general's office, and I asked them for their legal opinion as to whether or not the year-and-a-day rule applied, and also whether double jeopardy applied, and what concerns we needed to be concerned about. After getting the green light from the Attorney General's office, that's when I decided it was time then to take it to the grand jury. We took it to the grand jury, and the grand jury agreed, because the real issue in the case was causation. Did the injuries that he inflicted back in 1991, did those injuries actually cause the death of Amanda? And the grand jury agreed that they did, and they returned an indictment.
Now, I believe you told me in your research the longest period of time you had found between the cause, the causation, and the death was 4 years. And 22 years is five times that much. Did that cause you some concern?
It did cause me concern, because I wanted to make sure that we were well within a reasonable range. The research that I did convinced me, and also convinced the Attorney General's office, that the real issue was how strong was your causation tie. And if the doctors were strong in their belief that this was the actual cause, then they felt comfortable going forward with the case in light of the fact that this, I believe, would be the longest period of time in the state of Tennessee.
You know, I can recall when I was a district attorney, we had another case where an individual was shot, didn't kill the person, and they died a number of years later. And at the time they passed away, they were in Florida. And I can remember that person's mother calling me and wanting the person that shot him charged with murder. He had been found guilty of attempted murder, but now that the victim had died, she wanted me to charge the person with murder. And I looked at it. And unlike this case, where this young lady never was able to get out of bed again. She couldn't see. She couldn't speak. She was severely handicapped. Her lifestyle was such that she didn't have anything else that could cause her death, of course, unless she caught some type of disease, which was not the case. This young man in Florida had spent most of his life after being shot living on the streets, dealing drugs, using drugs, and things of that nature. And because of his lifestyle, I did not have the medical causation to be able to show that the gunshot wound was what caused his death. This case was very different.
And I understand, Bill, that we talked about changes in the law. There's been a dramatic change in the law as far as the aggravated child abuse statute over the years.
And I did want to say this. I was very concerned when we started talking about doing this case that Mr. Lane only received 10 years, which you pointed out to me, the range back then was 8 to 12 years. So he received right in the middle of it. But now, had this case been committed today, it would have carried a Class A felony, which would have been up to 25 years. So I'm glad that that's been changed.
When we return, we will go inside the courts.
It's where bold talk meets big laughs. The Rick Burgess Show, weekdays from 11 to 2.
The Rick Burgess Show, weekdays 11 to 2 on News Radio WGNS.
The viewpoints and opinions expressed on this broadcast are the viewpoints and opinions of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the viewpoints and opinions of this show, its host, or the management of this station. You are listening to WGNS.
This is Inside the Courts. A look at this month's trials, pleas, and grand jury action. Inside the Courts is presented as a courtesy of the Rutherford County Clerk's Office.
Good morning, everyone. This is your District Attorney General, Jennings Jones. And today, I will be your tour guide through the episode of Inside the Courts.
We begin this segment by stating that none of the defendants named in upcoming trials or hearings have been convicted, and of course, they are presumed by our law to be innocent. With that as a prelude, we will now go inside the courts. On May 31st of 2021, officers with the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to a call regarding a vehicle on fire and reported gunshots. Officers on scene located a burning vehicle with at least one occupant inside. The occupant was later identified as 18-year-old Taya Bryant. Shortly after responding to the call, authorities were notified of two young males that were in the vehicle with Ms. Bryant at the time. Detectives were sent to interview the males at the scene. Crime scene technicians located multiple casings from different firearms. The area was canvassed and officers were able to locate video footage from a resident's home security system. Additional video footage was later discovered at a gas station down the road from the shooting. An autopsy revealed that Ms. Bryant died as a result of a gunshot wound to the head, although her body was extensively burned as a result of the vehicle catching fire. Through interviews of the two males, police learned one of the males had an argument with his girlfriend, Donzilla Hamler. As a result of the argument, the male took her phone and refused to give it back. Miss Bryant and Miss Hamler were friends, and when Miss Bryant learned of the situation, she was able to contact Miss Hamler in an attempt to return her phone. However, Miss Hamler had gone to her brother, Dontorius Hamler, and told him that her boyfriend stole her phone and assaulted her. Mr. Hamler got at least one or two more other unknown males to go with him in Miss Hamler's vehicle to meet the boyfriend, who was with Miss Bryant and the other male. Video footage shows Miss Hamler's car pull into the gas station, park, and then back out of the parking spot and leave the gas station. Miss Hamler's vehicle was then followed by Miss Bryant's vehicle. Shortly thereafter, home security video shows the two vehicles traveling down Leaf Avenue. Gunshots are heard, and crime scene reconstruction showed that the lead vehicle, Miss Hamler's, opened fire on Miss Bryant's vehicle, striking the vehicle multiple times and Miss Bryant once in the head. The video shows the two males running away on foot. Witnesses from earlier in the night placed Miss Hamler and Mr. Hamler inside the vehicle 30 minutes to an hour before the shooting, along with one to two other individuals. Both Mr. and Miss Hamler were charged as juveniles with first-degree murder of Miss Bryant and the attempted first-degree murder of two males. The state once again petitioned the juvenile court to transfer both Hamlers to adult court. However, prior to a hearing, both Mr. and Ms. Hamler agreed to be transferred to adult court without a hearing. In February of 2023, both Mr. and Ms. Hamler were indicted on charges of second-degree murder, along with many various other felonies. The Hamlers were represented by counsel Mr. Ben Wetzel and Ms. Jennifer Fiola. The state was represented by Assistant District Attorney Trevor Lynch. After consulting with Ms. Bryant's family, an agreement was reached on February 20th of 2025. Both Hamlers entered pleas of guilty to facilitation to second-degree murder and two counts of attempted second-degree murder. They each received an effective total sentence of 10 years to serve in the custody of the Tennessee Department of Corrections. The investigation continues as to the identity of the remaining assailants. A trial is scheduled to begin on July 14th of this year on Alistair Jennings on allegations of first-degree murder and aggravated assault resulting in death. The defendant is represented by counsel, Mr. Ben Wetzel, and the state is represented by Assistant District Attorney Matt Westmoreland. A trial is scheduled to begin on July 14th of this year on Makeo Boyd and Montavis Guy Jr. on allegations of first-degree murder, attempted especially aggravated robbery, conspiracy to aggravated robbery, and possession of a weapon with intent to employ it during the commission of a felony offense. A trial is scheduled to begin on August the 11th of this year on Carmen De La Cruz for allegations of second-degree murder and aggravated assault resulting in death. The defendant is represented by counsel, Mr. Chris Fisher, and the state is represented by Assistant District Attorney Trevor Lynch. A trial is scheduled to begin on October 22nd of this year on Key Anthony Williams for allegations of first-degree murder, attempted especially aggravated robbery, employing a weapon during the commission of a dangerous offense, and possession of a weapon by a convicted felon. The defendant is represented by counsel, Mr. Ben Wetzel, while the state is represented by Assistant District Attorneys Trevor Lynch and Matt Westmoreland. And that will conclude this episode of our look inside the courts.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com. Every homicide, every rape, every robbery affects the entire community. People who are victims of these crimes need closure. The people who committed these crimes must be held accountable. Law enforcement needs the community's help in seeking justice. Please listen as we review an unsolved mystery in this month's Cold Case Profile.
Today in our Cold Case Profile segment, the murders of Cedric Herbert. I will be joined in that segment by Detective Sergeant James Abbott of the Murfreesboro Police Department and former District Attorney General and my former co-host of this program, William C. Weitzel, Jr.
Please listen as we review an unsolved mystery in this month's Cold Case Profile.
On June the 15th, 2009, at 9:17 a.m., the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to a frantic call. The nature of the call was a possible burglary at an apartment complex on East Northfield Boulevard. When officers arrive at the scene, they see that the apartment door had been kicked open. Inside, they meet the lady who had called the police. She told officers that she lived in the apartment and that earlier that morning, present in the apartment were herself, her small child, and Cedric Herbert. At about 8 a.m., she left the apartment and took her child to daycare. She went on to say that when she returned, she discovered the body of Cedric Herbert. The police investigate. They determine that 24-year-old Cedric Herbert had been shot to death. Police now believe that someone or a group of individuals forced their way into the apartment and shot and killed Cedric Herbert. Robbery may have been the motive. According to family members, Cedric Herbert had a large sum of money on him the day before the murder. Why he was killed remains a mystery. His killer or killers remain at large. Detective James Abbott of the Murfreesboro Police Department has reopened the investigation. He is now asking for your help. We are pleased to have with us today in the WGNS studios, Detective James Abbott. Detective Abbott, I'm always very careful when releasing information on any pending investigation, so I always leave the minute details to the investigators. Can you fill in the details regarding how Mr. Herbert happened to be in the apartment on Northfield Avenue that day?
Well, Mr. Herbert and the young lady that lived at the apartment just started seeing each other, and that he'd come over earlier that morning, sometime around 2, 3 a.m. in the morning, to see her, and had fallen asleep on the couch. When she arrived home, she found him laying face down in the bedroom, suffering from multiple gunshots.
Tell us why you were taking another look into this case.
In these kind of investigations, you always kind of, especially on your cold cases, you go back. But as we like to sometimes say, we're past the CSI phase of these type of cases. Now it's getting these kind of cases out in front of the public and getting information from possible people that have heard things, or people that may have known information but was afraid to come forward then. They may now be more willing to come forward.
Are there any class of witnesses who you'd like to talk to, such as friends, coworkers, or other persons that might help you fill in the blanks?
Yes, we'd like to speak with any friends of Mr. Herbert's, any associates of Mr. Herbert's, coworkers, anyone, family, anybody who may have information about this or information about his activities were and what he was doing up to about 48 hours to 72 hours prior to the homicide would be very helpful. Also, we'd like to speak with anyone who may have just heard what is sometimes called street talk. It would be great to hear from those folks that may have heard something from just someone who may have said, I heard this from someone who heard this from someone who heard this from someone.
I know that you're a very experienced cold case detective and have worked some very good cases. What efforts has law enforcement made to get this case in the public's eye and ask for the public's assistance in solving this crime?
Again, we're doing this show this morning, which is a great tool, especially the local level, to maybe try to get the information out. And we're also working with our public information officer using social media, and we're going to try to get this out on the social media sites as well.
What can you tell us about Cedric Herbert or the apartment complex or anything that might help a listener think, oh, I remember when that happened?
The apartment complex is over on East Northfield, and it is near the intersection of Highland and East Northfield. Mr. Herbert was a gentleman that lived here in Murfreesboro. He lived actually out on Bradable Pike area, but he resided a lot with this young lady from what we understand now when he first started seeing her there at the apartment. But Mr. Herbert would oftentimes be seen with friends over on Academy Street and also around Eagle Street. So people may remember Mr. Herbert from those areas as well, Mr. Cedric Herbert.
If anyone has information regarding who killed Cedric Herbert, who should they contact and what phone number should they call?
They should contact myself. They can call me, Detective James Abbott. My number is 615-893-2717. Or they can also call our local Crime Stoppers.
Detective Abbott, we want to thank you for being here today, and we want to thank you for the job that you do.
The Monthly District Attorney Show, heard exclusively on News Radio, WGNS, the first Friday of each month.
As we end our program today, we thank WGNS for providing the airtime. And we also thank our producer, Scott Walker. Most of all, we thank you for listening. We leave by saying, a safe community is the responsibility of each and every one of us.
For my two co-hosts, Jennings Jones and former District Attorney General William C. Weitzel, Jr.,
this is Paul Newman, bidding all of you a safe and blessed day.
The District Attorney's Office thanks you for listening to today's program. If you have any information regarding criminal activity in our community, please contact one of our law enforcement agencies. The information presented on today's show is solely for informational benefit and not intended to be legal advice. You should always consult an attorney whenever you need or rely on legal advice. Rutherford County's most trusted name in news. Talk Radio WGNS, Murfreesboro.
If you missed any part of this program, it will be available shortly as a podcast on the WGNS website.